getting older. Cannot sleep, got random pain.
In some ways you're wiser, bolder, but you're sweating.
It's like rain.
Search for answers, getting colder. They can't fix it, can't explain.
Your anxiety will smolder.
You've become a sex withholder.
There's bursitis in your shoulder.
'Cause you're circling the drain. Circling the drain. Circling
the drain.
Circling, circling the drain.
Down the drain.
Hello, and welcome to the Circling the Drain podcast in 2022. Woohoo!
Woo!
Yes, she's excited. Can you hear it? I'm Ellie Dvorkin-Dunn. I'm 45, and I know I'm in perimenopause because the holiday gifts that I got included Arnica-infused joint cream.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yes, multivitamin face masks and collagen peptide powder.
I stan all of these gifts.
You stan them.
Yeah, for sure. I'm Julia Granacki. I'm 46. And I know I'm in perimenopause because I am somehow reverting to my first puberty as opposed to my perimenopausal puberty in my TV choices. Like teen dramas, Ellie. It's like teen dramas. So I know those sound like really helpful gifts. And I won't talk about what I got because it's really boring. Like, I like your gifts.
I don't want to sound ungrateful. I like my gifts too. And it's just funny that, like, I'm sure a part of it has to do with this podcast. And, you know, the minute you say you like something, like people who like unicorns,
oh, yeah,
like everybody buys them a unicorn, right? Lots of people like mm-hmm. to get me cheese because I love cheese. Well, now that, you know, all I talk about is our podcast, people really want to get me things that have to do with aging. And I'm just saying it's great and I need it and I love it and it's all high quality. It's just not what my Christmas stocking used to look like 10 years ago. Okay.
Yeah,
right. It was like, it used to be little bottles of booze and sexy underwear and chocolate. And now it's full of items targeted toward my midlife physical issues.
You didn't get any chocolate?
No, I still got chocolate. My people aren't complete fools. They got me chocolate. Tell me about your TV regression that you mentioned.
Right. Yes. Teen dramas. So, you know, like give me Riverdale, give me Lock and Key, give me Sabrina. You know, I don't know if it's a sense of nostalgia, but I download this stuff on my phone and watch it like during my commute because I have like a pretty long commute, you know, in the morning. I don't watch it in the morning. Usually after work, it's like my kind of like my like wind down on the train, you know, or sometimes I watch it like during my workout. Like if I'm on my like my rower or my bike, I'm just like taking a little, you know, like Riverdale, like, what does this mean? I think I need pointless drama where the stakes are either artificial or like really low, because shows like Succession, for example, they fucking stress me out and raise my cortisol.
I hear that. I hear that. Handmaid's Tale, stressful.
Yes.
Lots of stress. Yes. You just want, you want your entertainment to just be mindless and relaxing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's too much stress in real life. I get it.
Yeah.
Speaking of cortisol, do you know what time it is?
I do, Ellie. It's time for Science, Bitch. Today, I want to talk about my most favorite hormone topic, and Ellie knows this is my most favorite hormone topic, and that is cortisol. It has been mentioned a lot on previous episodes, but we haven't taken a deep dive into what it is, what it does, and what happens with it in our perimenopausal years. Forgive me, for I'm about to go down the deep butt of the cortisol rabbit hole, and it will be a little bit more lengthy than usual.
It's all right. I'm here for this because every time you mention cortisol, I glaze over and just nod and smile.
Yeah.
And you'd think like I would have absorbed the knowledge by now, but I really think you need to spell it out. So go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to try. I will try not to make you sleepy as I explain.
Okay.
All right. So cortisol is your body's main stress hormone. It governs the sympathetic, which is your fight or flight nervous system, and the parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest nervous system. It works with certain parts of your brain to control your mood, motivation, and fear. But it also plays an important role in a number of things your body does. It manages how your body uses carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. It keeps inflammation at bay. It regulates your blood pressure and blood sugar. It controls your sleep-wake cycle, and it boosts energy so you can handle stress, which is the sympathetic response, and restores balance afterward, which is the parasympathetic response.
I'm falling asleep, for sure.
Well, Ellie, that might be due to chronic stress. High cortisol, in fact, is what it could be for you if you are falling asleep right now. Yeah. If your cortisol is out of whack, you might have something called HPA axis dysfunction, which stands for, are we ready? Hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysfunction. So it's easier to say HPA axis dysfunction. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. Or more unscientifically referred to, and if you say this to any doctor, they're just going to give you the side eye and like blink a lot. But a lot of people call it adrenal fatigue, which it's really not. It's what I just said.
Okay. Don't say it again, please.
In a perfect world, okay, your cortisol should rise upon waking and peak around 7 a.m. So from there, it decreases very slowly through the day, right in time for it to be at its lowest when you go to sleep at night. Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The best way to get tested for this disorder is by doing a 24-hour urine test. This way, a doctor can track the rise and fall of your cortisol in a 24-hour period. And I'm not going to go into the difficulties of finding a doctor to do this for you. That's some controversy for another.
Yeah. Episode. No, I've heard you talk about it. It's difficult. All right. So what are some of the symptoms of HPA or whatever you call it?
Not feeling rested when you wake in the morning. I think we maybe can all relate to that one. So not feeling rested in the morning, even after you've had like a really great night of sleep, you know, feeling really groggy, right? When you wake up in the morning. Conversely, disrupted sleep or being wired and tired, where like you're really tired, but you can't fall asleep.
Oh, I have that.
Yeah. Okay. Crashing in the middle of the day. And I'm not talking about a caffeine crash because we all know what a caffeine crash feels like. I'm talking about like catatonic, not able to function type of crashing. Additionally, and not surprising, brain fog. High blood pressure, hair loss, and increased belly fat. Most importantly, given this is a podcast about perimenopause, I want to stress that this really, like really fucks with your progesterone and the way it impacts the body. But since the science bitch has already gone way too long and we really don't have time to get into, you know, all of the things, I'm just going to say that it just fucks with your sex hormones. So for all of that to be in harmony, your cortisol needs to be under control, and you should really read the article that we're going to post in the show notes.
So what can we do to ensure that our cortisol levels are stable? What can we do?
Okay. I know we're told this all the time, but managing stress is number one, ladies. So like, I know it's a cliche, but you really have to engage in some kind of consistent and regular self-care. You absolutely need that to function. Second is consistent exercise. And if you struggle with elevated cortisol, you might want to start incorporating more of like a passive exercise. So you're not like running on the treadmill for an hour. You know, it's more like biking, walking. You might want to do something restorative like Tai Chi or yoga, or even something more joyful. And I know it sounds crazy, but dancing. Dancing is like really, it does so many things for you in terms of lowering your cortisol and just releasing dopamine and all kinds of like things that you need. So also, omega-3s are excellent for inhibiting adrenal activation. And lastly, orgasms.
All right. Well, I think you and the listeners already know how I feel about sex lately. So
I know. So to clarify, when you have an orgasm, there is a release of dopamine and oxytocin. Okay. These are neurotransmitters that cause a calming effect on the body. So whether you have sex with another human or with yourself, so let me be clear, like it doesn't have to be with another person. It has a positive. Yeah, just have an orgasm. It has a positive influence on your nervous system. If that's not for you, you can get similar calming benefits by like cuddling and hugging on your family members. Or like if you have, you know, animals, your dogs and cats, like that also releases dopamine and oxytocin.
Well, this has been really informative. I promise to implement at least two of those things into my lifestyle, but I shan't tell you which two it will be. I shan't tell you.
You shan't. We're reverting back to Victorian England.
I feel lofty.
We've done
about
that a couple
it.
Times. We're like full circle.
Just a thing. Just a
back
thing.
Back to Victorian England. Well, I'm pretty sure I can guess which ones, but this is way too long. Tell us who's on the pod, Ellie. Who's on the
pod? Oh my gosh. Today's pod features Kate Fraser Neely and Allison Crockett, two singers who are also vocal coaches. And this one is very niche because we focus on the changes that happen to your voice as you age. But I don't want you to tune out if you're not a singer or professional speaker. This is a very entertaining and enlightening interview where we discuss how the vocal mechanism mirrors the vaginal mechanism. And we focus on some crucial issues like the inequality that Black women still experience in their medical treatment in the year 2022. Kate Kate Fraser Neely is the co-author of the Amazon bestseller, Singing Through Change, Women's Voices in Midlife, Menopause, and Beyond, and is one of 26 voice teachers featured in Dr. Elizabeth Benson's book, Training Contemporary Commercial Music Singers. While working together, her students have appeared on Broadway with the Washington and Virginia Operas, the former Cirque du Soleil, Disney Tokyo, and National Musical Theater touring companies. Among her current students are a two-time Grammy Award winner and established folk and jazz artists. She has also worked with the hearing impaired and child actors in film and built vocal music education programs for girls and women's choruses. Her background as a reviewed performer and artist educator includes enough experiences for three lifetimes in music. Kate currently works as a singing voice specialist, which is a voice teacher who has received special training to work with singers who've sustained vocal injury or undergone vocal surgery. She receives referrals from speech-language pathologists at Johns Hopkins Otolaryngology and throughout the United States, Canada, and the UK. She is the mother of two adult children, ages 33 and 29. Kate, we are so excited to have you.
Thank you. Boy, that was the best reading of my bio I've ever had in my life. That was incredible. Well, I sound so fancy.
You are fancy.
And as I introduce our next guest, I'm going to try to do just as well. But as listeners, I'm sure have figured out by now, I will never compete with Ellie's excellent, excellent articulation, but I always do my best. So now I'd like to welcome to the podcast Allison Crockett. She is a soul and jazz diva who has been in the worldwide music scene as a vocalist and educator for decades. She has created a program that seeks to educate and include singers of all ages and generations in the joy of singing vocal jazz. Allison has been an award-winning and prolific jazz, soul, and electronica vocalist and has been featured on dozens of recordings as well as two EPs and four full-length records, most notably the chart-topping On Becoming a Woman. She has been described as a mix of Nina Simone's urgency, Betty Carter's chops, and Jill Scott's sass. Allison has also spent the last two decades of her life promoting music and jazz vocal education. As a university professor at George Washington and Shenandoah Universities, and formerly an elementary musical educator, she has trained jazz and pop vocalists from ages 3 to 83 privately, chorally and through workshops and masterclasses, both digitally and in person. Currently, she is releasing recordings based off of live performances with her My Father's Record Collection series and connecting children and families with the joy of swinging and scatting and understanding the history and culture of jazz music through her organization, Generations of Vocal Jazz. On top of that, she is the mother of two girls, age 17 and 11. Welcome to the pod, Allison. And I actually got that out pretty well.
That was beautiful.
That was great.
I think you did a great job. I was not mad at that.
Pat myself on the shoulder.
You did well. You did well.
Thank you.
All right, ladies. Please introduce yourselves with your name, your age, and a brief statement about where you are in your peri or menopausal journey. Allison, why don't you start?
Okay. Wait, I done forgot all of this you said as soon as you said you start. My name is
Your
Allison
age.
Crockett.
Yes.
I am 49 years old. I have two kids. That's what they are.
And where are you in your perimenopausal or menopausal journey?
I am fully blown in out of menopause. There ain't nothing coming out of my hoo-ha. There's nothing there. It's like, and this is done. And I get hot flashes. People are like, oh, how many hot flashes? What do you do? It's like, I get, you know, a couple, an hour.
Oh my God.
So I don't get it as bad. You know, it's more like six or seven a day or something like that. I just have to deal with it. And I just do. But I don't know what that qualifies me to be in my menopausal journey, so to speak. I guess it's, I'm in it, through it.
You're in the tunnel.
Yeah, there's nothing else happening in terms of coming out, but it's just I got the hot flashes and I'm still going through some light vocal changes and some body changes and things. But, you know, yeah, I'm in it.
You're in it. And it hasn't been a full year since you stopped getting your period, or has it?
Oh, baby, that's been 2 years.
Okay.
I was 47, 46. They took the tubes out.
Oh, yes.
And I was like, within 6 months, they were like, we done. We can't produce
so
anymore.
You have achieved it. You have achieved the menopause. Achieved. Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Official
Thank
menopause.
You very much. Thank you.
And Kate?
Well, I'm the old lady here. I'm 65, and I have been post-menopause for 23 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I went in early menopause, which science defines as ages 40 to 45. I was done at 42, had no clue. And my well-meaning doctor was so vague that when I went to discuss it with him, I got gibberish and fairy dust coming out of his mouth. And my children were 6 and 10 at that time.
Wow.
So I think my daughter must have been my last egg, to tell you the truth.
Mm. I love that.
But that's where I am now. There is life. There is life after menopause. And it is possible for life to get better and better and better and better. You might still have health issues. You might still have relationship issues. But the creativity and the owning yourself, and yes, the sexuality, can be pretty sweet.
We love hearing that. We've had a few women so far who have completed menopause, who have really positive things to say about the other side. And we love that message getting out there, because it's not the rhetoric in the media, right? So it's so good to hear from actual women who can shout it from the rooftops. So thank you for saying that. Okay, so this musical topic is near and dear to our hearts, because Julia and I met in college as musical theater performers. We were recently introduced to your Facebook group, Singing Through Change, by my dear friend and vocal coach, Kimberly Stern, and I was amazed to see that you have over 2,000 members on a forum specifically designed to discuss what happens to a woman's vocal mechanism as she ages. It's so niche, but clearly this is a thing. Now, I don't sing publicly anymore, just at home to my son, but even doing that, I've noticed that I can no longer hit notes that used to be easily accessible to me. So I know that this is a very involved topic, but Kate, can you give us a brief overview of what is happening anatomically and hormonally that causes these shifts in women's voices?
Woo-wee. Okay. We tend to think of ourselves as phases. We start our periods. We maybe get pregnant or don't. We go through perimenopause. We go through menopause. We go through postmenopause. These are sort of unnatural divisions. It's the woman's life cycle. It is part of our biology. And it turns out that hormones and hormone shifting affect the voice, affect the whole apparatus, because in there, in the voice box, and there's two little slivers of cartilage called the vocal folds, there are estrogen receptors. There are other sex hormone receptors, progesterone receptors. There are testosterone receptors. And the voice responds to thyroid hormone also. And you know that thyroid is right there, sitting right on top of the voice box. So what we know about singing and menopause, and we're talking about even if people just love to sing, we're not talking about professionals, but we found out about this through professionals, women, who kept going to their doctors years and years and years ago and saying, something's not right. My voice isn't right. My range is garbage. I feel like I have a frog in my throat. My voice feels like there's a wooden sliver in there. And of course, we were told it was all in our heads until a man by the name of Dr. Jean Abitbol got together with his wife. He was an otolaryngologist, and his wife, Beatrice, was a gynecologist. And he had been one who said, it's all in your heads, it's all psychological. And she said, no, wait a minute, let's do an experiment. And they took slides, they took cultures of the vocal folds and the cervix, and discovered not only are the same cellular structure in each individual woman, but the tissue responded in the same way.
Wow.
Interesting.
And that was the beginning of understanding that our hormones can affect our voices.
That's remarkable.
Well, and I know that you posted this...
A diagram
of the vagina next to the vocal cords. And it just blew my mind. And listeners, will be sure, I'm sure that this will get tagged onto our promotion.
Yeah, we reposted it at the time, but we will post it again when this comes out.
We will post it again. But absolutely fascinating. I mean, I don't know what it means in like the grander scheme of the universe, but it really made my brain explode.
Me too.
Well, there is a great article, and I'll try to find it, about why these two things matter. You know, when power structures want to silence us, they silence our voices, they make us think we're crazy, and they rape and plunder. Mm-hmm. So those two openings, those two holes are our expression, and they are part of who a woman is and our biology. And it's just been fascinating as a writer of this book, a co-writer, because my co-writers are Nancy Boss and Joanne Bozeman. And when we started writing this book 3 years ago, we'd uncovered our own journeys. That's when I found out I was postmenopausal by 42. I did not know until then. I just knew, like Allison said, nothing's coming out.
Uh-huh.
So we each have an individual story, and we each individually respond to our hormone changes in our voice. Not everybody's going to have vocal issues, right?
Right.
And the issues for a singer, if you think of it as sports, and I know I'm preaching to the choir to you guys, but no 50 or 60-year-old athlete is going to expect to be as fluid as when they were 20.
That's true.
And it's the same with singers. And not everybody, we don't want to create a nocebo effect saying, you know, these things are going to happen, beware. But we do want people to be aware, because when you're aware, you can find out the resources to help you with management and with coping with things as they come up.
Right. As opposed to the doctor who's like, it's in your head, or they have nothing for you. They have no information. They have no data. I mean, that's, I think, the worst, most.
Yeah. And actually, this would be a good time to say that most informed menopause doctors are aware of studies on the speaking voice and testosterone hormone therapy on the speaking voice, which don't show many changes. But the singing voice research is quite different. It shows that there are major acoustical changes. There are major perceptions by the artist in how her throat feels and in how the voice sounds to her. And singing is not speaking. Singing has a different set of requirements. And we would love for the medical community to at least know about this, because I've been shot down in menopausal forums before saying there's no difference. They're aware of the speaking studies, mm-hmm. but not the singing mm-hmm. studies.
It's interesting, and I saw you post about this on Instagram today, about the testosterone things. And when you're speaking about testosterone, you're speaking about hormone replacement therapy.
Right.
And there's been some very, and we'll post more about this too with the episode and in the show notes, but there's new data about testosterone and HRT, because it's been a little like inconclusive over the years, because you know, they're not totally like, yes, it's supposed to help libido and do all these other things. But still, even if I think if you go to the Mayo Clinic website, for example, I think there's a lot of like, it has been known to, we think it does. There's no like speaking with certainty, right? So I think in general, there needs to be more research also, just so we understand how it affects the body and if it's really doing its job, not only affecting your vocal cords, but if it's actually doing the other things
right
that it says it's supposed to be doing. Right.
And by the way, if you are a singer with a high voice, or a classical soprano, or any other kind of singer with a high voice, testosterone will permanently lower your voice.
Oh, wow.
That's really important to know. And for a non-singer, that's not that big an issue.
Right.
Right. But for someone who identifies with their voice, because the voice is the sound of your soul, it's the sound of who you are. I can tell Allison's voice, you know, I can tell your voices now. You identify with that. And when that goes, you have a grieving process.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you're saying this, because I've been on testosterone for about a year. I am a soprano and I have stopped taking it. I stopped taking it for, I don't know, like 2 months ago. So I will report back folks, and let everyone know like how that's going to go.
Do you mind me asking why you stopped taking it?
Because, well, you know, this is a scientific report that I read that had, there was a correlation between testosterone and visceral body fat. And that's been something that I've been struggling with. And I thought, well, you know what? I've been doing it this one way for a really long time and nothing has really changed for me. I have not experienced any of these improvements that are supposed to occur with taking it. So I'm just going to go off of it. I mean, oh, excuse me. I did get very hairy legs and a very hairy vagina out of nowhere. So 70s bush was back and I had like crazy hair growing down my legs. And I'm like a fair-haired person. So I was like, wow, this is like a jungle down there in between my thighs. Anyway, that was the only thing that happened. Nothing other, and that was like a negative, right? So like there was nothing really positive coming out of it. So I was like, why am I taking this? Like, why, you know, I'm on progesterone. I was like, I'm going to stop taking the testosterone. I'm going to see what happens and like report back. And I immediately lost some weight. Now, I've been doing other things that could contribute, but this is like a whole other episode. I don't want to go down this
right,
path.
Got it.
But that's the main reason why I stopped taking it, yeah. But I'll do some singing and see like where I am on that. And yeah,
you should privately record yourself and then record yourself every few weeks and see if it's
keep a log.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this. I love experiments.
Do an experiment.
An experiment. Well, that was a bit off topic talking about my hairy legs. Allison.
Talk to us about your hairy legs. No.
I mean, if you want.
No.
Talk to us about your own voice. You are still performing live on a regular basis. And as you said, you are in the midst of the process, but not completely finished with menopause.
So, well, she is finished. That's my fault. I got from your pre-interview, I thought you were still going through it. But now we know it's a dry cough down there.
Right.
Yeah. So
and
she
and
is
also,
finished.
As we know, Julia just like reads things sometimes and doesn't like think a whole lot when she reads the script.
That's fine.
Okay, so you're on the other side of menopause. What changes have you noticed in your singing voice and how do you feel about them?
Well, you know, first I didn't, you know, when I was going through perimenopause, it's a complex kind of situation because my voice didn't necessarily change, and I have little air quotes over top of my head so much, but how I had to utilize it changed. So when I was going through perimenopause and I was seeing Kate at the time, excuse my computer consistently for, you know, people want to reach out to me, I guess. But, you know, I was working with Kate and I had to do consistent shows and I was going through a lot of just physical changes that I just associated with stress because I was getting divorced at the time. I had several jobs. My children were both under 10. And I was hustling and working and gigging and doing so much different stuff. And my acid reflux had just kicked up a huge amount. And I'm like, where is this coming from? I don't understand. I had been taking care of my acid reflux without medication for a very long time. And nothing that I did, water was making me burp. Water was making me have problems. And I was just, I was coughing and all sorts of things. And so I had gone to Kate, I had to do a record release, and I really didn't have much of a voice. I mean, to the listener, everything was fine. But to me, it was like imagine that you're running and it looks like you're running fine, but you have rocks in your shoe. And so to the outside world, nobody can see those rocks in your shoe and you're still running, but you know, you're trying to find a way to run without pain or to be able to do some of the things that you did before, to be able to run longer distances, like you have to run shorter distances or you have to run uphill, whatever, because, or you've got the wrong shoes on or something. And so that's kind of what was happening. And I had to kind of, I mean, man, I did all sorts of stuff. I turned around, I was blowing bubbles through a straw and, you know, I was humming and and turning around so nobody would know what was happening. So I had a shortening of my range. I just didn't have as much oomph for a second. Then I stopped working so much and that seemed to cool out the acid reflux. And I realized, oh, a lot of it was just work stress mixed with perimenopause, because then I found, oh, crap, you know, I'm going through menopause. I was in a relationship And I started noticing that I was crying every single time I started to vocalize.
Wow.
Oh. And so, you know, I was carrying so much stress and pain and frustration every time I started to go, I would start to cry. And that never happened before.
You were holding some sort of emotional baggage in your vocal mechanism.
In my vocal mechanism. And so then, you know, the hot flashes started. And of course, you know, my mother had said to me, she got menopause at 47. But because she had a hysterectomy, I had thought that, well, maybe I got more time. And maybe it was because she had the hysterectomy that she started at 47. Oh, no, I started 2 months before I turned 47. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, doctors will often ask, you know, when did your mother hit menopause? Because we tend to follow, you know, what our mothers have done. But it's so upsetting to me to hear you talk about this, mainly because this is your, you know, this is your instrument that you count on. And there's nobody out there, you know, there was no one there to assist you or help you in the medical community. Like, that, you know, there wasn't a doctor that was like, hey, this is what to expect, or this could affect you, or... It's upsetting. And I also think about, you know, you've got your pelvic floor, right, which you need to have access to support everything up through your diaphragm to push the sound out. And all of that is affected by perimenopause and menopause, and your digestion, which is affected by progesterone. So I'm like, I align with this completely because I have had terrible acid reflux that I have been struggling with.
It's really frustrating. When I took the time and I stopped certain things, then my voice started coming back because I physically was able to rest. But then what's been happening lately, and I'm still kind of dealing with that actually to this day, is that if you do not practice on a regular basis, like literally, like before, like I have pretty much leather vocal cords. You know, I kind of got through everything. I didn't really need to do a whole bunch of stuff. But now if I don't practice on a very regular basis, singing for long periods of time, I don't connect to that support mechanism automatically. I don't connect automatically. I have to force myself through practice to connect with that support mechanism. I literally warm up laying down in a bed or laying down flat so that I can feel the pelvis tuck and then feel what's going on, so that I can make the voice stay in the right spot. So I did a gig earlier this year and I was singing and literally my voice was, I was scratchy and I was in pain. Now nobody could really hear what was going on, but I had to make adjustments and I had to sing in the higher part of my voice. So right in the area where I'm going to be singing the most, right where you're hearing me speak, that would just start going away over time while I'm singing on the bandstand.
That has to be terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I thought that I had also, I was like, is this a paresis? Is that? And of course, I went to Kate and she's like, no, just let's go ahead and let's sing kind of quietly and let's go ahead and kind of squeeze down there a little bit.
I do want to say, that's her interpretation. I didn't use those words.
No, she didn't.
She didn't. No, I didn't tell her to squeeze anything. No.
Well, you know, it's like, let me put it this way. Access this portion of your body.
That's gentler. That's gentler.
And she, you know,
but I do want to say that people need to know that there are voice teachers who are singing voice specialists or SLPs, speech language, where we know how to work with in small targeted ways, the same way a sports therapist will work with an athlete.
Absolutely.
So you don't get the jargon that most people think of with voice training and diaphragm and stuff. You don't get any of that. You're working backwards in such small steps. And then you have someone like Allison who knows what she's doing and is a fantastic teacher herself. And she can take a couple of sessions and just run with it because she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. It's that body connection, I think, to the vocal mechanism, right? Not everyone can feel all the way down to their pelvic floor all of that support. So if you have that connection, then yeah, I would imagine that you can get some, you know, a briefer amount of direction to really like begin the healing process, or like a process to work with what's going on, rather than someone who's just cold turkey, doesn't have a clue as to what's going on. That's going to be a little bit more difficult.
Well, that's the thing. It's that when you're dealing with these kinds of issues, and you know, you've got a recording, you've got a gig, you've got to keep on moving, and people are expecting a certain sound to come out of your mouth. That, you know, literally, this is how I make money.
Right.
Yeah. That's a tremendous amount of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. And so you can't just go to anybody. You literally can't. And I, as you were saying about medical people, but you know, even I have a Black female gynecologist and the whole thing, because I said, okay, I moved from my gynecologist, who is a really, really attractive Filipino man. He was good to look at. And he delivered my second child. And every time I went, I was like, yeah, I'll be over here. This is good. And he was a really nice guy. But when I was talking about hot flashes, he's like, well, let's get you some Prozac. Emily's like, okay, oh, yeah. Wait. And so I was like, okay, I got it, because I'm the child of doctors. So I was like, okay. And then I was just talking to Kate, and I was talking to other people. And it wasn't, you know, it was several people were like, are you sure that you want to get on this substance for this? You know, do you know that it takes time? If you don't want to take this anymore, you can't just get off it.
Right.
You know, you know, it becomes an addiction kind of situation. You can't really do that. And, you know, that's kind of what happens, that physicians don't always, even the most well-meaning ones, mm-hmm. they have no clue. I have gone cold turkey. Literally, I have no hormones in me because my mother had ovarian cancer. Yep. And she survived. She found it herself, by the way. And wow. She did. She diagnosed it and found it herself.
Amazing.
And to this day, I'm really mad that she never really made a big stink about it, because she felt down there because she was giving herself intravaginal cream.
What was she a doctor? You said both of your folks were doctors.
Yes. My mother was a geriatric specialist. So she worked with home care services and she worked with older people. And so she felt down there and she was like, what's that thing right there? And then she, because she's a physician, she was able to get, you know, seen the next day. And they're like, oh, well, you got cancer. Whoa.
Terrible.
But she has survived for, I think it's now been 16 years with the cancer that should have killed her in 5.
I'm so glad to hear this.
Thank you. So I took the tubes out because I'm like, well, they said that ovarian cancer might start in the tubes.
Sure.
So let's take those out. And I'm like, then I won't take out the ovaries because I don't want to go into menopause. And then it was like, that's what made it move a little faster. So I probably was already somewhat there. I probably was going through perimenopause at 41, 42, 43. And I thought that little switch that you have where your brain just doesn't work as well. Uh-huh. I thought that was just turning 41.
Right.
Did hormonal reasons.
Yeah. So many reasons for the brain fog.
So that was the whole thing for me in terms of the voice and figuring out how to deal with it, not really having a lot of places to go to have the conversation, and literally having to have conversations with non-medical professionals who are going through it either themselves or who had some experience in dealing with it, you know, just to kind of be able to say, okay, you should be all right, do this. But my mother's a physician, was like, I had one hot flash. And I said, that's enough of that. And I never had a hot flash again. And I really wanted to say, mom, I have hot flashes 20 times a day. I don't, you know.
She just told them to go away and they went away.
That's what she said.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
But then my mother pierced her own ears at 6. So
all right. Well, she needs to give you some of this juju. I don't know. It's just power of the powerful brain she has. Amazing. She sounds amazing. Okay. Back to Kate for a second. Kate, so we talked about celebrating the other side of menopause, but you did mention in your pre-interview that some of your worst symptoms came after you completed menopause and that some still rear their heads from time to time. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I still get very, very warm. Very, very warm. They're not really hot flashes. It's just like this golden glow that pulsates like an alien ship. And I do want to say that there, I think that we are the first researchers or writers to claim that, see, medical science and voice science put the Mary Penomaze.
I love it. She is our Mary Penomaze is going to be our mascot. We're going to draw her and post pictures of her in different costumes. Yep.
She is also going to be the name of this episode.
Mary Penomaze. Carry on, Kate.
I don't remember what I was saying.
Of course you don't. How could you possibly?
Perimenopause. Did I say that right? And menopause, even menopause, are lumped with the aging voice. And they really are biologically separate things that can overlap or not. So vertigo. Vertigo became actually debilitating. There was 1 year where I spent on my sofa. It was a whole year. And I saw every kind of ologist there was to see. And nobody, on paper, I looked healthy as a horse. I was tested for infectious diseases. I was tested for this and that. I was tested for mold in the system. I was tested for bacteria in the gut. I was tested for parasites, which I think are all important tests. If you find a doctor who's woke and can actually prescribe, you know, tell you to get that right.
I'm assuming they had ruled out Meniere's and they had ruled out like labyrinthitis and...
I saw audiologists.
All the ologists.
Yeah, every kind of ologist there was. And in the meantime, my husband and I was about 60 when this was at its worst. I couldn't concentrate for more than 2 seconds. I lost the ability to carry a conversation. Evidently, I haven't improved that much. And my husband and I had started to say, maybe you need to find someone else to enjoy life with. I know you love me. I know you love me. I know you'll be there for me, but maybe it's time. If this is the new normal and we can't get any help. And I was led to a couple of things. One was a very controversial book by Anthony William on vegan diet and how it can help starve viruses. And I thought, well, maybe if I make my inner environment inhospitable to viruses, that would help. It helped immensely. But then I did a presentation called Reframing Menopause for Singers for a group in Berlin called Total Vocal Freedom. And that's when it lit up. I've always been interested in hormones and singing, and I've done a lot of work with female singers. I work with male singers too, but the interest has been through a woman's lens and taking a look at all the populations of singers that aren't served in vocal pedagogy in particular, because it assumes a certain baseline of function of the larynx that scientifically is based on the young male larynx.
Right. As both most studies and so forth are based on the male anatomy. Anyway, so this is no surprise.
And it, as an aside, we've known about hormones and singing since the 8th century. That's 700s. But only as it applied to the male voice, and in particular, the young male voice. You know, in Europe, during those times, they were overly obsessed with keeping the male voice pure, so there'd be sopranos in their cathedral choirs, and they would regularly castrate young men to keep them from having their voices rise. Now, that didn't guarantee that they could sing, though. I mean, it was a really cruel practice.
Terrible. They were called the castrati, right? I mean, that was the group.
Yes, the castrati. But in any event, the point being, we've heard about hormones and voice in men for a very, very long time. And I don't think most of the research on women's voices started until the 1940s. And then voice and singing, we've been helped along by a lot of really cool women in their doctoral programs writing their theses on menopause and singing. My vocal issues were not so much a result of hormone changes, but I developed a rare bilateral vocal fold paresis. Both vocal cords became partially paralyzed, and there were about 5 different reasons for that. None of them were hormonal, though. So my situation with my voice is a different situation, and I kept singing well, even with partial paresis, until my late 40s. And then, because there was no one knew what they were looking at, all the otolaryngologists at that time didn't go far enough with testing, or they didn't know, whatever. I didn't get it properly diagnosed for 8 years. And by then it was pretty far out. I have also spent the last 8 years getting it back and was able to sing with Allison in a small public thing a year and a half ago before COVID hit. So I went from 2012 to 2020 without singing in public and barely singing at all.
What a victory that you came.
Yeah. I turned lemons into lemonade by sort of getting into all this stuff and saying, okay, I don't want anybody else to go through this. So we have to get the word out.
That's great. That's exactly right. That's the best way to take control of a situation that feels like it's out of your control.
Right. And I think that most women, because of our experience with all of these other things, that's the go-to. Well, if someone else isn't going to fix it or figure it out, then I guess that I will, right?
Like you guys are doing with a podcast on perimenopause. I wanted to suggest that in terms of the medical community, Allison has interesting perspectives too on what she has experienced as a woman of color, right? With expectations and with stress and with the medical community.
Tell us anything you want to say about that, please.
You know, the main thing with that is, of course, you know, that gynecology started off, the whole practice in America started off by taking slave women and performing, you know, and performing those experiments to figure out how to use the very things that we use right now, the speculum that we use right now, because of course we weren't supposed to be able to feel pain. You know, it's just only recently that we started saying that babies feel pain.
That's right. It's interesting you say that. I was just reading about this like 2 days ago.
Yeah. So, you know, we're still dealing with some of the issues of what was it? Serena Williams was saying when she was pregnant that she, you know, when she was giving birth that she almost died simply because they didn't take her seriously and they didn't take her pain actually seriously. So one of the things that I've had to deal with, and of course I come from a medical family, is the understanding that, well, you got pain. So what? You know, you just kind of suck it up and deal with it. And people don't necessarily take all your pain very seriously. And so, you know, I did participate in Montgomery County, where I live. There is actually a study that was being done with various friends of mine talking about our experiences with childbirth because there was more child fatality in the Black community. And so, I mean, that was kind of the experience, even still with menopause, in terms of, well, you know, let's take this thing, or, you know, it's, I think I was taken seriously, but can't you just suck that up? Isn't this, you know?
Not acceptable.
Can't you just figure this out? You know, and I think that's one of the reasons that I just went raw dog and with nothing else, because I said, well, you know, if I add anything else to what it is that I'm dealing with right now, in terms of if I do hormonal stuff, if I take this extra medication, I don't know what it will do. And I'm not sure that anybody's willing to really explain to me how well this is going to work. And that also sometimes goes with Black female doctors too.
Sure.
So it's not even that, you know, sometimes you go to people that look like you and don't necessarily understand what it is that you're going to deal with because they were trained by the same people, by the same institutions. So that, you know, that's what we talk about when we're talking about institutional racism or institutional issues. It's that, you know, you don't have to be doing it purposefully. You know, you're trying to do the best job that you can, but my Black female doctor's like, well, you know, you could take Prozac for these hot flashes. Wait, what? You know, and I'll trust her for other things, but I'm like, I'm out with that.
Something that comes to mind when you're speaking about that too, it just makes me think again of when we were just talking about, you know, this focus of the anatomy being based on the male anatomy, a lot of these, you know, studies and so forth. But similarly with the effect of drugs. So whether it's Prozac or something else, a lot of these studies, if they were done on women, they were done on white women. They weren't done on people of color. And what we're beginning to learn and what was kind of being talked about a lot with, for instance, with the COVID vaccine is making sure that the studies are done on a variety of populations so that we understand how each population reacts to the drug. But that goes for everything. And I hope that we can do better. That's all I'm hoping for.
I think that's what the whole thing point of this show is that we're starting to talk about that there are different people and we don't necessarily need to just deal with, like, a lot of studies are done on college students simply because they're there.
And they need the money.
They need the money.
And they need the money. So we're not talking, but you know, college students, I'll be 50 in 2 weeks. What does that, what does that have to do with me? And so, you know, we have to kind of start thinking about different populations, different age groups, and so that we can start to understand how things affect people differently. Because my experience, you know, I'm kind of like what Kate says, I'm not really having huge issues with my voice in comparison to others.
I want to talk a little bit about why this happens. First of all, as we get older, the voice box, the larynx, when you're younger, that thing can move. You can throw it around. You can belt stuff. You can scream. You can stuff and it bounces right back. And the elasticity is there, right? Just like skin. But starting from a very, very early age, like age two or whatever, the larynx starts to calcify. It starts to turn to bone. And by the time you are in these later years, I'm talking about aging in general, just the whole thing, your larynx is turning to bone. So you can't throw it around like you used to without some repercussions on the vocal folds themselves and the inner laryngeal structures. And there are good things about that. And this happens to be, the reason I brought that up is because, as Allison was saying, she has to be, you know, and I do too, very mindful. Because once you become mindful, you discover what it can and can't do. And you learn to, sometimes learning to live within limits is a really good thing. But there is a recalibration that has to occur. There's a growth mindset has to be employed. Sometimes it takes years to recalibrate all that. But if you have the awareness and discipline, and most importantly, support to do it, with a joyful heart, that's the part that's hard because it's all related, then you should be able to find new ground. And I also wanted to let you know, we talked about estrogen and progesterone and testosterone receptors in the vocal folds. Estrogen is a major player, vocally speaking, because the vocal cords are made up of four layers and they roll. And they're supposed, that roll is supposed to slip and slide, you know, like Juicy down there. It's supposed to slip and slide. And without the estrogen, that suppleness gets a little rigid, which means that it functions differently. It's kind of like the instead of the vocal folds rolling and juicily vibrating, they kind of slap together, stick, and come apart. And that happens, and the estrogen also is responsible for the glands that produce mucus that coats the surface of the vocal folds, and hydration becomes more of an issue. You're thirstier.
It's like the KY for your vocal cords.
Yes, yes, exactly. And estrogen maintains the tone and bulk of your skeletal muscles, which includes the deepest layer of the vocal folds, which produce lower pitches. Some voices actually go higher. Some voices go lower. And they also are part of the structures of the tiny muscles that produce your higher notes. And estrogen blocks the androgens, testosterone, preventing the lowering and the thickening of the voice. And it also increases oxygenation to the vocal folds, which is very important for the blood vessels getting the oxygen that they need. And progesterone and testosterone also have function in vocal fold function. And they're all meant to work fluidly together. So I just throw that out there so that people know why Allison was talking about it. Just, it doesn't feel right. It's not moving. I can't quite connect.
There are physiological reasons why.
And this woman is in shape. I mean, you should see, she's just got the most darling figure and she works out and she eats right.
Yeah, God, I just had some potato chips because I just wanted them.
You're permitted. You're allowed. You are allowed.
So these things do affect the inner structures. And for, like I've said before, some women, they make no difference. We also get a lot of people saying, well, if you just use the proper technique, I can teach you the proper technique. And usually that does help. I'm not sure what people mean by that. But we have interviewed and talked with, and the three co-authors of the book, we were all fine singers. You don't suddenly become a bad singer. We all studied, joyfully studied.
You don't lose your technique.
Right. Technique is your technique.
You learn to finesse and address the issues as they come up. So just automatically saying you need better technique is a judgy, non-helpful, and not always true statement.
Yeah, you don't just because your leg muscles start withering for whatever reason doesn't mean that you're walking wrong.
Right. You know? It's a great analogy. No, that's exactly right.
I think, Julia, we should transition into the final four.
I couldn't agree with you more, Ellie. You literally read my mind.
Go. Yeah. Why don't you start it off?
I'm gonna. Okay, so we've reached the end of the interview where we ask the final four. If you've listened to any episodes before, you will know that this is the thing that we do. The first question: what do you wish you understood at 30 that you know now? Let's go with Allison first.
Oh, what do I wish that I understood at 30 that I know now? To relax.
Oh, yeah.
I wish that I had known that how you verbalize the world, I think I said this earlier, how you verbalize your world is how you experience your world. And so if you experience your world as frustrating, not coming towards you, not getting what it is that you want, or that's what you're experiencing. And if you just relax and see the world, if I had relaxed and saw the world at 30, the way I kind of see it right now, even though I have all the anxiety attacks and all the other crap, I would have felt a little bit more at ease with who it was that I was, to know that you're fabulous, regardless of what situation that you're in.
I like it. Relax. Mm-hmm. Kate, how about you?
Well, this sounds a little narcissistic, but I think it has to do with self-love. I wish at 30 that I had known just how far off the bell curve I am, so that I could accept myself and love others and avoid so much of my adult life was spent in frustration that I felt like I was misunderstood or not being heard. Part of that is part living in a patriarchal culture, right? That we are not heard.
Yep, 100%.
But part of it, and this has to do with Allison's verbalizing your world, I assumed everybody's head was where mine was, which is not fair to anyone. I just didn't know any better. And that's what I wish that I had known at 30, or that I could have had reflected back at me in the years before that.
That's great. Question two, what do you have an abundance of? Either one of you can go first. Whoever feels ready.
I have an abundance of family and friends support.
I love it.
And an abundance of libido at 65.
Yes.
Yeah. Amen to that. We love that.
I like that one. I just need to have a libido with another human. That would be fun. That's all I want. Just another human that I like.
She has an abundance of desire for another human.
There we go.
To share her libido.
Her libido. Oh,
there you go. I have like an abundance. It. I guess I get spiritual. I have an abundance of blessings. I have a beautiful family. I have a beautiful home. I have wonderful friends. And I have a life that I've created and I worked really hard for that is blossoming in the way that I want it to blossom. So, you know, I have an abundance of blessings.
That's gorgeous.
Love it. I love it. What part of your body are you most proud of and why? Anyone can go.
Okay, I'm going to say it.
Do it. Tell us.
My ass.
Yes. We got a lot of ass on this show.
It's mighty fine. I do say so.
Thank you. And I appreciate it. Because I'm learning to appreciate my belly, because as menopause occurred, my ass got larger. But what also got larger at the same time was the front part. And so I am learning to appreciate the front part, because without the front part and the belly, I wouldn't have the back part. And the back part, as somebody said when I was 16, you could lose your keys in there. That's nice.
There's a lost keys theme on the show, Ellie.
There is. Yeah.
I lost my keys literally in the front part, but that's a whole other story.
That's the part that I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
My daughter, when she was 5, she was looking at me and she said, "Mommy, why do you have a butt like flat pancakes and mine is like a melon?"
When she was 5?
When she was 5 or 6.
Man. Jeez.
That's like, kid, go to your room. Go to your room.
I mean, I howled. I laughed so hard.
They're still cute at 5. So what's your answer, Kate? What part of your body?
My sister's.
Oh, yeah. Listeners, she just adjusted the camera to give us a view of her titties.
Of the ladies. Yeah. Of the titties.
And they were nice.
And my legs. I think I've got shapely legs.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Wonderful. I align with all of this. Yeah, 100%.
Final question. What single piece of advice would you give to the next generation of women to prepare them for the transitional changes to come?
I think I've probably thought about this more because of the book. I think that what's interesting to note is that women in other cultures don't have the same symptoms or as many symptoms as women in the US, England, and Canada, and even parts of Europe. I think that says something about our culture. It says something about how the work ethic is tainted by the need to be productive and useful all the time. Work ethic is not a bad thing, but it's on steroids in these countries. Yeah. And how we treat the earth is how we treat ourselves. And so menopause is a time when those symptoms come, it's your body talking to you saying you are due for a change in a lot of things. And you need to learn to listen to what I'm trying to tell you in a no words way.
That's deep.
Mm. Excellent advice.
Yes. It's
excellent. And wisdom.
Thank you.
Okay, top that, Allison.
I don't know if I can top that, because I'm like, can I get an amen? Yes. I guess the advice that I would give a woman who's getting ready to go is some of the advice that I've been trying to do. Get ready. Mm. You know, just get ready. There are going to be some changes. And there are going to be some changes that you like and some changes that you don't like. And don't be afraid of whatever changes are going to occur. They're just changes. And if, you know, some things you won't like. But on the other hand, you know, not having a period is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's fan-frickin-tastic. So, you know, all that stuff, like I just, you know, I live in a household of two other girls, and they get periods, and I'm not pulled in any direction because of them.
Yeah.
It's really nice, and I can wear white whenever I want. I don't have period underwear anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have period pants. I don't have cramps. I don't have instant fatigue where I used to, you know, be driving, get incredibly cold at the end of the day and fall asleep and get into an accident because I fell asleep at the wheel because I had fatigue because of my period.
Wow.
Yay.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have that no more. I mean, I traded in for hot flashes and a really, really open mouth.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to say what it is that I want to say. So I think that's a pretty good
trade-off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a bonus question. Again, if you've heard our show, you know there's always a bonus question. It's a surprise question at the end. Okay, what is your favorite song to sing in the shower? And a bonus question. If you answer this question by singing a few lines of it rather than just telling us what it is, but no pressure, just, you know.
No pressure, really.
No pressure.
I don't sing in the shower. I talk to myself.
You do?
So I do. I talk to myself.
Out loud?
Out loud sometimes. Just because I believe in talking out loud. Sometimes I'm crazy. But sometimes talking out loud is an action and it helps me to get through my thoughts. So sometimes I'll do that. And if I don't have a favorite song, I grew up with music being played in my house. So I'll just play it in my head like a radio.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now I'm here. Could it be I'm falling in love with your baby? I mean, might do that. So, I mean, you know, that's just came in my head just right now. So if it comes in my head while I'm in the shower, that's what I'm singing.
Kate, what about you?
Well, since I have some vocal function back, my favorite thing is to do bad jazz renditions of Bach's Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, which is very nerdy, I know. Do ba do dwe do do dwe do do dwe do dwe do 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 ba da boo do ba boom ba da ba.
I feel like I just won the lottery.
I know, that was fantastic.
She scattered.
No, not with Allison on the show. You don't call that scatting.
All right, I won't call it scatting. She did something.
I was playing.
She was playing, yes. And Mary Penemaz is behind me applauding. She's applauding behind this chair. Ladies, this has been fantastic. I'm so glad that we connected. I loved every second.
Thank you so much for asking us. We had a great time, and we will forever be listening to your podcast.
Hey,
oh, we'd love to hear that. Thank you so much. And if you are looking for more information on Singing Through Change, the book or the Facebook group, or would like to seek out the coaching services of either of these wonderful women, or want to find out about their upcoming performances, please check our show notes for all of the links to all of the things you could ever possibly want.
Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Take care.
That was so great. I love when we get super specific, you know?
Indeed. Yeah. Please be sure to check out our show notes to find out more about Kate, Allison, Singing Through Change, and my favorite, Cortisol.
And remember, we are still trying to reach more listeners.
So
if you like our podcast, please review it and share it with anyone you think might benefit. You can also support us at Patreon by clicking the support button on the episodes page of our website or by going to patreon.com/circlingthedrainpodcast.
And now we will end our first episode of the year with a new segment we will call Fewer Fucks. It does not have to do with a reduced amount of sexual activity, although I suppose it could. It goes something like this.
Here we go. This week, I have fewer fucks to give about people who lash out at me in anger. I no longer wring my hands and wonder what I could or should have done differently. I simply tell myself that it's not really about me. As my favorite character, Freddie, said in one of my favorite episodes of A Different World, relax, relate, release. Do you remember that one? Relax, relate, release.
You know, I don't, but what year was that?
Like 1990 something. Anyway, you know.
The 90s are a blur.
Yes. Maybe it was the 80s, late 80s. Email me your angry words, angry person, like Cree Summer in A Different World. I no longer give a fuck.
I love it. And I have fewer fucks to give about people who ghost. It used to drive me crazy if I didn't get any kind of response to an email or a text or like a very prolonged response similarly, which is kind of like in the same category as ghosting, where you think someone's ghosting because you don't hear from them, mm-hmm. like a text.
For weeks.
Like,
yes.
For weeks. Like crazy, right? But obsessing over someone's lack of attention does not deserve a spike in my very precious cortisol. So if you don't reply to me, I don't give a fuck.
I support it. This episode was produced by me, Ellie DeVorkin-Dunn.
And me, Julia Granaki.
We feel your pain.
You're not insane.
You haven't gone down.
You're just circling the drain.